Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Mahani Jahangiri, and welcome to Conversations with My Dog.
Today's guest is Lydia Ward, survivor and trustee at safeline.org.uk and psychologist specializing in confidence, resilience, and communication. Now, it is an honor to speak with Lydia today to raise awareness of support for victims / survivors of sexual abuse. Thank you, Lydia, for coming on the show today. How are you?
Marnie, it's my absolute pleasure. Hi.
Oh my God, this is a difficult introduction. This is the first time, I guess, on the show that we are really looking at a very profound subject, especially now. I mean, the whole month, I think, is all about sexual abuse awareness and, you know, the hashtag that you've mentioned as well.
Yeah, hashtag it still matters.
It still matters. And I mean, there's everything in there, isn't there? Because that is exactly what happens with survivors, with victims, that they sometimes don't even know they've been sexually abused. It comes so much later down the line, doesn't it? I mean, maybe 20, 25 years further down the line in life, suddenly that awareness may come up. And it's,
yeah,
for some people, maybe they think it's too late to report. So maybe you want to explain a little bit about this.
Yeah, absolutely, Marnie. I really agree with you, and I really hear where you're coming from to say, gosh, this is such a difficult subject to get started with. It's still so socially awkward. You know, there's still such a taboo around sexual abuse, rape, sexual violence. And it makes people feel so uneasy because it's human on human. And that's, I think, part of what makes it so awkward. The hashtag It Still Matters is so profound and so important. There are incredible people who experience some kind of sexual violence and are able to speak up at the time and to move forwards with their lives, to move forwards with the situation and for people to be held to account. But actually, the vast majority of cases are people where it has happened in their childhood and they weren't old enough to understand what was happening to them at that time. People who don't want to admit, perhaps they were slightly older and they want to reframe the situation. It wasn't quite that. It was something slightly different. Mm. Because nobody wants to have to admit, gosh, that really happened to me. So I think that's why the hashtag It Still Matters is so important, because it doesn't matter when this happened to you. It doesn't matter if it unfortunately happened to you today, and there may be someone listening who has experienced that. It doesn't matter if it happened last year or 10 years ago, or if it happened 70 years ago. It still matters. It's a violation of your body, of your boundaries, of your rights.
Yes.
And that's why it still matters.
Lydia, I just wanted to say, with sexual abuse, sexual abuse, can you define it? Can it include emotional and mental? What does it really include? You talk about boundaries. It's what is a boundary? Can you define that for us, please?
Sexual abuse, if we were to look at it as a clear definition, would be about a sexual act being taken out or pushed onto another person who was not a willing participant. However, when we talk about the abuse side of it, there is always a mental, psychological, emotional abuse aspect to it, because people are forced into situations that they are not choosing to be in. So sexual abuse is specific in the fact that there is a sexualized act. Now, that does not define it as the act of sexual intercourse. It is a sexualized act where one person is behaving in a sexualized way towards another, and the recipient is not a willing participant. But as I say, with that, there then, of course, comes trauma, emotional abuse that perhaps, or mental abuse that has led into that situation happening in the first place. And there is always mental and emotional abuse afterwards, in the fact that the person, the victim and survivor, has then is then left with all the trauma to deal with.
With all the trauma to deal with.
So it's a really, really complex area. And it's interesting that sexual violence is a phrasing that is being used more and more now. My only wariness around that, and the reason I feel that sexual violence and sexual abuse should both be used, is that it may not feel to many people to be a violent act. They may have been coerced into understanding it as a form of love. And only in retrospect do they understand that that is not love at all. And to me, that is where that is abuse as opposed to violence. And I think it's important that we understand that it's about the sexualized act. And if you feel yours was of violence, or if you feel it was of abuse, that is for you to determine that. But do not feel that because it wasn't violent, it wasn't abusive.
Absolutely. And a child, say a child of 3, 4, 5, 6, how would they even understand sexuality if it happened to them? You know, how would they alliterate that? How would they even describe it in their words? Because they may have a sexuality at that time, but they don't understand it. They think it's a game or a thing, isn't it? You were mentioning the secrets, you know, we're going to a secret place. And so how can a child comprehend that? It must take years and years and years and years to even comprehend that this might have been sexual.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, that was, yeah, my experience, as you referred to there, was so between the ages of 3 and 7, I was sexually abused by a very, very close family friend. I didn't understand it in any way to be sexualized at that time. It's only as an adult or as a teenager, and obviously your sexual awareness awakens, and then you begin to understand, oh, hang on a minute, right, that puts that experience into context. What I do know is at the time I knew that I didn't like it. I knew that it didn't feel right. I didn't feel comfortable. I think the difference that I see now in the way that primary schools and education now approaches this is children are taught so much about having body boundaries and about safe touch and kind touch and inappropriate touch, and about how you can say no to anybody and your body is yours and you set your own body boundaries and people cannot come inside that that boundary that you set unless you say it's okay for them to do so. And even then, there are certain different types of touch which are okay and which are not okay. And I think that is incredibly empowering and wonderful. And I appreciate that there are perhaps some parents that feel that their children are getting educated in something they don't need to know about. But having been a child where that wasn't part of my education, and therefore I didn't really understand body boundaries, and nobody had talked to me about safe touch and those sorts of things, I knew instinctively that it wasn't okay and that I didn't like it, but I was told I couldn't tell or I would get into trouble. And that is so often the case. I was told that it was a secret, and we are taught that we are not allowed to share secrets. So I wanted to be good. And that was the power that was held over me at that time, was in order for me to be seen as a good girl and to not upset the family, then I had to put up and shut up because this is what this was. And that was the premise of that particular relationship. So it's really difficult.
And you were rewarded at the end with going to a cake shop or something like that? What is sweets given? And because that's pretty much the pattern, isn't it? It must be something with sweets, with some extra chocolates or something. It's so typical to that kind of reward in childhood, I think. And the extra grooming, I guess, that comes along with it.
Yes, I think, you know, we often reward good behaviour, and treats are food related, aren't they? So it was an extension of that, you know, and I was and still am a very foodie person. So, you know, that was great to me. It was like, right, I'm going to a cake shop. That's lovely. I don't like what happened beforehand, but at least I know I'm going to a cake shop.
When did it happen for you? When did you realize this wasn't right? I mean, was it like a flashback? Was it? I don't want to go into details, obviously, but how did the big wake up call come? Where you said this is no? Did the brain suddenly just wake up? Or
yeah, it's an interesting one. So as I said, the first time that I was abused was sort of between the ages of 3 and 7. The reason it stopped with that particular individual was that at the age of 7. When we used to go and visit the house, my parents would leave me with him and they would go off shopping. And I just turned around one day and said, I don't want to stay here. I want to go shopping with you. And I still remember my mum crouching down in the hallway and saying, well, why? Why don't you want to stay here? I mean, you're very welcome to come shopping with us, but why don't you want to stay here? And I wouldn't say, I was just like, no, I'm going shopping. Now, I remember feeling incredibly anxious and nervous at saying that because I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And I remember being really focused on my mum's face and not daring to look away from it at all because I didn't want to catch anybody's eye. But so that was the end of it, really, which was I was never left alone with him again, just because that's what I asked, you know, to have happen. But nobody knew why. I was then abused again when I was about 12 years old by another close family friend. And again, I you know, massively suppressed that, remembering at the time that, you know, I didn't want to tell anyone. I didn't want to have to, you know, again, sort of ruin the family dynamic and all of those sorts of things. So my brain sort of kept all of that information away from me then for a few more years until I was about sort of 15, 16. And I was in the car of my boyfriend at the time. And I just had a huge flashback and just remember thinking, oh, God, that's a horrible thing to think. And God, my, you know, what's wrong with my imagination and my brain? And the flashback just kept coming back and the memories just kept coming back. And that's when I realized, God, actually, that really happened. That's not just, you know, a weird random thought. Like, those are actual memories and that happened to me. And so for me, it was very much a flashback situation at a time when I was becoming more sexualized myself anyway.
Yeah, and the flashback went all the way back to the age of 3. Did the brain go all the way back to that age?
Yes.
That's very interesting because people...
Yes, it did.
They say, I know some people I've asked, I said, do you remember this year? And they go, I haven't got any memories from the past. Like, people don't remember things. And some people remember a lot of things from the past. And I find that fascinating that you can remember something as early as a year or even before that, I think. Did you then, from then, when you then had the flashback, how was your mental health? Did you deteriorate from then? Did you go into depression or abuse? Or, you know, if you can talk about it, you know, did you act out on these memories?
There were a few different paths that I took, really. So I think the flashback also happened around the time that the first abuser was very ill and actually died shortly or sort of around that time shortly afterwards. So I'm sure that was a trigger for it as well, was the bit of my brain sort of going, oh, if he's not around, then maybe you can start to remember this a little bit. But it had an enormous impact on my mental health. So I was then sort of going into college to do my A levels, and the 2 years of me being at college doing my A levels were just horrendous. I mean, the depression was absolutely awful. The second year of my A levels, I could barely make it into college most days. I could just about go in to collect some work and then bring it home again. I pretty much, you know, stopped eating, you know, was trying to survive on about 300 calories a day for a few years. You know, just trying to, I guess, gain some kind of control in my life or to make myself disappear a little bit more, all sorts of things like that. And the depression really continued. I mean, all the way, you know, sort of into my early 30s. And just sort of scarred the map of my life, really, going all the way through my 20s, was just trying to appear normal. And I guess what I would call a functioning depressive, you know, trying to appear normal, trying to hold down a professional career, but actually with crippling depression, not a clue who I really was. I was just doing life by numbers.
Exactly, because depression doesn't have to be just lying in bed. It could be overactive depression. It could be overworking. It could be, especially workaholism, you know, workaholics have an active depression. Is that correct? Am I right there to say that you can be completely completely depressed? So it's often misunderstood.
It is very misunderstood. And we have to remember that actually behind depression is always a level of anxiety. I think that a lot of people think, well, you either get depression or you either tend more towards anxiety. But actually, they are both forms of anxiety, which is I have a huge amount of worry and tension and stress in my body. It either goes down the depression route, which is I find it hard to function, or it can go down the anxiety route, which is I can find it hard to function, but in a very different way, or I overfunction in the world. I think it's so complex, but there is no mistaking that any kind of sexual violence, sexual abuse will leave its mental and emotional scars on people. And that's the hard thing about it, is the wound. You didn't ask for the wound, but the responsibility of healing it is yours. And that's a very, very difficult thing to come to terms
Absolutely.
With.
Absolutely. But what's more difficult, I even think, plus, not more difficult, but as difficult, is how do you tell the family years later? I mean, did your family notice you were too thin, depressed? Did they have any cause of concerns? Were the teachers involved? I mean, was there ever a face-to-face with your family eventually about this? I mean, maybe this is too personal if you don't want to mention your family, but that must be one of the hardest things. Will they believe you?
Yeah, I mean, will you be believed is probably the biggest reason that people don't come forward. Alongside that, the fear is, I did something to deserve this. I encouraged it in some way. I'm in some way to blame. I did tell my family, but I thought for a very long time that I never, ever would. There was no way I ever really wanted to have to tell my parents, because I didn't want them to have to know. I didn't want them to have to deal with any feelings of guilt that maybe they had missed something. I have always believed it was never their fault. I still believe that to this day. There was nothing that they could have done that would have prevented this, because the people in question, nobody would have ever expected it of them at all. So I did tell my parents eventually, when I was in my very early 30s, and I was working abroad a lot at the time, and wasn't in a very healthy relationship either, and needed some time off. And that meant that I would be in the UK for sort of 4 weeks that the doctor signed me off for. And so I needed to explain to my parents why I wasn't going to be abroad for 4 weeks, and why I also wasn't going to be going into the office in the UK for 4 weeks. I mean, not that I lived with them, but just the fact that I would be in this country for that long was sort of not part of the plan. And so I did explain to them, and I said, you know, actually, I've been going to see a counsellor. I have really, really bad depression. And this is why. And I first told my mum on her own. And then we together went and told my dad. And it was the worst and the best day for me, really, because I remember leaving my house that morning thinking, I have no idea how this is going to go. They might not believe me. They might be upset with me about it. You know, I don't know what the outcome of this is going to be. And I was incredibly fortunate. And it is sadly not everybody's experience, but my parents believed me straight away and were, you know, very supportive. But that isn't everybody's experience. And I think that must make it, you know, just so brutally hard. You know, I was fortunate my friends have also all been very supportive, and you know, I've always been believed by people. And I think, to be honest, it's probably joined up a lot of dots for people that have known me for many, many years, to kind of go, oh, okay, oh, that makes a little bit more sense about why you were the way that you were. But as a person. Yeah, it's an incredibly difficult conversation to have, because it's not a pressure or a guilt that you want to put onto somebody else.
And a guilt maybe just to talk to your friends. You feel like you're putting pressure and guilt on them if you talk about it. Like, you don't want to give them that burden, in a way. I guess that's why you don't talk about it, because you're scared, you know.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, it's like, well, goodness me, what do I say? You know, if somebody discloses to me that some sort of, you know, sexual abuse, sexual violence or rape has happened to them, what do I say? How do I make them feel better? And it is incredibly difficult. You know, what I've always said is, just listen. That's all you need to do, is listen to that person. Understand that the reason that they are telling you this is that they trust you. And all they need in that moment is to be heard. And they may need to be held. They may not be. That's for you to ask and say, what do you need from me right now? You don't have to tell them it will be okay. You don't have to, you know, try and make it right for them again. You can't. That is something that they're going to have to figure out. Hopefully, you know, with the support of trained individuals, which I had. But just to listen and be there for them, just as a silent companion, to say, you know, how can I help you? What do you need from me right now?
And to report things. If you were, say, 25 years down the line, you want to report the person who abused you. How does that manifest? I mean, I wonder whether the reporting and going to trial and taking that person to jail, you know, is that not a lot more exhausting than winning? Do some people feel that they've won, taken it all the way? Do you know what I mean? Or is there another way of healing?
I think everybody heals slightly differently from this. My personal situation was that by the time I truly remembered everything that had happened to me, both people had died. So reporting it from that perspective wasn't really an option for me, because obviously there could be no criminal proceedings. For some people, it is needing to be heard and believed in a broader setting. And the other side to that, of course, is wanting to make sure that nobody else can become a victim or a survivor of this particular perpetrator either. And that's why some people go forward. If you do choose to go forward and take this to the police, which can obviously feel like a huge step as well, because again, every time you tell somebody, you're risking not being believed. And I think that can be a lot of what puts people off. But there are trained counsellors who are called independent sexual violence advisors, or ISVAs, which I appreciate is a huge technical term, but they are specially trained counsellors in sexual violence who also understand the police and court proceedings. That's not to say that they are legal counsel. They are trained counselling therapists, but they are there to help and support you and be alongside you as you go through that process from an emotional support capacity. And they are the most incredible people and invaluable. We have them at Safeline, and they are just wonderful people who get the most difficult, complex court cases and support the individuals who feel that it is right for them to take this all the way through the legal process.
Absolutely. And can you tell me a little bit about Safeline.org.uk? Is it a new charity?
Yes. No. So Safeline. So I am an ex-client from Safeline, and I am also a trustee on the board at Safeline now. I've been with them for, I think it's about 8 years, but it could be nine. But I'm fairly sure it's eight. It's one of those things where it's been so long, I'm like, crumbs, I'm the longest serving member on the board at the moment, which is a little bit of a bonkers thing. Makes me feel a lot older than I am. Safeline, so we are a charity based in Warwick. We have been around for 25 years now, well, just over 25 years. And we specialise in having counsellors available to victims and survivors of sexual abuse and sexual violence. So we were initially just a Warwick-based charity set up by female survivors of sexual abuse for other female survivors of sexual abuse. And we have, over the 25 years, become a much larger charity. I'm really, really proud to be a part of it. I first came across Safeline because I needed support myself. I had been to see other counsellors and psychologists, all wonderful, lovely people, just to try and help me with my depression and things like that. And I had mentioned to all of them, you know, that I had been sexually abused as a child and talked through that side of things. But we'd never really gone into much detail. I never felt like they quite understood the impact that experience had had. And so I remember Googling one day, you know, survivors of sexual abuse, and Safeline popped up as a charity that happened to be not far from where I live. And I contacted them, and they were able to see me, I think, a couple of days later for an assessment. And I remember walking into the building and sort of saying, oh, yes, I'm here for an assessment. I think I just, you know, I wondered about, you know, maybe a little bit of group work, but I'm fine on the one-to-one stuff. And I remember Betty, my counsellor, doing the assessment with me. And she was like, yeah, I think you're probably going to need one-to-one and group work. She could obviously see that I was not as far along in my journey as I thought. Yes, she was wonderful. And so I did. I had years of one-to-one counselling and group counselling with Safeline, which was amazing and made all the difference to me, to really have counsellors who understood the impact that sexual abuse and sexual violence has on a person, the scars, the emotional, mental, even physical scars that it leaves on people. And so when I was sort of through my therapy and had sort of gone out on my own for a little bit, I contacted back the charity saying, look, I really want to do something to support you. I don't know whether that's you want to use me to, you know, as a ambassador or spokesperson or whatever, but I'd love to do something. And that's when they invited me onto the board. So we are still Warwick-based. We support women, but we also have the only national male helpline as well, which is massively supported and funded by the Ministry of Justice, which we're really, really proud of. because it's really important. You know, this doesn't happen just to women. It does happen to men as well. And women and men process it very differently. And they want to talk about it using a different media. They want to talk about it in a different way. And we've found that actually a phone line for male survivors is much, much more successful. And we've found that for female survivors, actually, they tend to want more one-to-one face-to-face therapy. That's not to say that that's what suits everyone. And we also have a female phone line as well. And we can do emails and web chat as well. But yes, we have the National Male Helpline, which we're incredibly proud of as well.
And the statistics are one in four women may have been sexually abused or are sexually abused, and one in five or one in six males have been sexually abused, which is incredible. It's not far
off
at all.
And we have to remember that those are the reported numbers as well. So when we think of the sheer amount of people that don't ever report, we have to suspect that actually, unfortunately, the numbers are higher than that.
Higher than that. And how do you, I just wanted to say this one important question. You said you realized you had a choice whether you wanted to be a survivor in this. You have a choice. But I'm just wondering, for somebody who is in the midst of depression, how can they find that choice in them? How can they even find that force in them to say, I can survive, you know, with depression? I mean, I'm sure Safeline supports in every way to come to that point. Is that correct? When you're in the midst of depression, I cannot imagine it must be completely catatonic, not wanting to breathe, not wanting to move, not wanting to eat, not wanting to do anything anymore. And then you say, oh yeah, but you can survive. You know, it's that this is a difficult transition to make that choice, right?
It is a hugely difficult transition. And I guess, you know, I didn't make that choice from a place of feeling catatonic. You know, I made that choice, as I said before. You know, I was always a bit more of a sort of functioning depressive, like I could just about get through a work day as long as I came home and could hide and do nothing. You know, so I wasn't necessarily functioning in a normal way. I wasn't able to massively socialize. I wasn't able to necessarily handle things like household bills and stuff like that very well. You know, things might sort of slip through my fingers and then I'd sort of try and grab them back again. But for me, I guess it came from a place of, the longer that this has a hold over me, then the longer it feels like I'm still being abused.
Right.
And that it was like I was giving it more air than it deserved. And that, I think, was when I sort of began to say, actually, I didn't ask for this to happen to me. I didn't do anything to make it happen to me. In no way was it ever my fault. So why does it still get to be a massive part of my life and who I am every day? And so it wasn't from a place of necessarily anger, but it was from a place of power.
And can you remember where that power, where did it, because as a yoga teacher, it's interesting, we call, can you remember where the power was in your body? Was it all over, you know, was it within? Could you describe it for me, that power somehow? Did it have a physical sensation?
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah, I think the power in me probably comes more from around my heart. Oh. I think I probably have a brain that analyzes, which is understandable given what I've been through, but I have a very, very strong intuition as well. For me, it's always felt more like it comes from around my heart, which is actually, there is something else that needs to burst out here. I think I'm analytical because I had to be, but innately I'm probably more intuitive. And I think it was that side of me that was coming up, and that's where the power came from, which is, I am actually so much stronger than they were. You know, they were weak because they preyed on a child. So that says more about them than it does about me. And actually, I can come out and be so much more than them, but also so much more because of them or in spite of them.
Interesting. Without pushing it away, you include it. It's incredible, incredibly complex.
Absolutely. Yeah. A really hard concept for me to get my head around to begin with. It was something that I dragged around behind me for, you know, over a decade, and understanding through therapy that for me, I actually had to absorb this and go, you know, which was just like, oh, I don't want to. I don't want anything to do with this. And it's like, no, you've got to absorb this and take your strength from the fact of it happened to me, but it doesn't define me. It is a part of something, but it's not necessarily a part of who I am. It is just a scar that I carry.
Speaking of absorbing, and this is my key question, because, you know, I work with dogs, I work with humans, and I do yoga with dogs and humans together. But actually, it's human yoga, and the dog is there. So I was wondering, your dog, do you think he knows what happened to you? Do you think animals absorb the abuse? Do you think they feel what happened?
I think that Coco and I have a very strong bond. Coco is a rescue, and I don't know what happened to her in her first year of life. But she used to be quite anxious and quite worried, and there are still flashes of it in there. She is a dog who needs me to be pack leader. And she is okay if I'm okay. If I'm not well, then she absolutely sticks to my side. But if I get upset, then she gets a little bit worried.
Does she reflect you? Does that help you in a way to know where you are in your emotions, or is that worrying for you if you see the dog is worrying about you? How does that impact you?
It's not worrying for me. It is definitely a reflection. I think I am much more aware of my emotions because of having a dog.
Wow. How fabulous.
Yeah, she's a good emotional barometer.
I mean, with Robbie, I notice when I'm crying, he'll come and lick my tears. I mean, he's a Maltese, by the way. He licks everything. He licks my nose, but he'll come and lick my whole tears. And the way they look at you, if you are in a distress or if you are in an argument, say, I have an argument with my mom or something like that, his chin is down, he looks, he's really looking up going, stop this, you know, this is not nice, but not in a punishing way. They just reflect innocence. I think innocence is the key, that an animal like a child, completely innocent. And you think, oh my God, we need to stop this. Look at Robbie. You know, it's got to stop. I think, you know, for myself, suffering from mental health problems, you know, with severe anxiety disorder, kind of borderline personality, during the lockdown, Robbie let me know where I was. He, you know, his little face let me know, damn, I need to make a move. I need to get out of this house. I need to get on with things. You know, they're incredible healers and little therapists. And I was wondering, just very important, this is such, yeah, they are. I was thinking about child abuse, you know, sexual abuse with children. I was wondering, including an animal in therapy, especially with children, teenagers, do you think that's a good thing, pet therapy?
Yes. Yes, I do, actually. Yeah, I think animals are, and particularly dogs, I think, are great at calming anxious children down. They are a great tool with which to talk through to a child. So you can talk about, I wonder how you think the dog is feeling. I wonder how, you know, the dog would feel if people weren't nice to it. And those sort of, if you could tell the dog anything, what would you like to tell the dog? And so they are incredibly calming, soothing, gentle energy to be around. And I think they're enormously powerful in child and young people therapy. Absolutely. I think they just drive from love, and they have so much to teach us in that way, which is, you know, Coco was probably not treated very well in the first year of her life. And yet she's come here and she trusts, and she just leads with love, even though another human being has hurt her. She's come to me and said, but you're different. You're a different human being. So I try you now, you know, and I just think that's incredible. There was so much for me to learn just in that.
Incredible. I was, if I may mention, I was working for Kids Company for many years as a in-house yoga teacher. And I was working street level in Peckham at the shelter, the famous shelter where all the kids would come from school after school. And these kids were severely abused, emotionally abused, raped, everything you can imagine was there. And I was twice weekly doing yoga with them. And it was the biggest journey I have ever gone through in my life. Honestly, Lydia, I have never, ever had to hold it together in that way. If you would have given into the drama and the testing and the boundaries, you would have flipped. But I managed to get regular yoga classes with a group of kids and even one-to-ones in the Heart Yard Center. And I always thought the children would disclose things in a calm environment like yoga, when we would sort of, once they build up that trust and it's okay, it's safe, we're breathing, we're chanting, they would suddenly, like I would say, let's bring our palms together, let's pray, let's chant for something. And then they would actually disclose everything to me in that prayer. More things were coming out than an actual therapist could have got out of, because it was yoga. It didn't have a definition. For some reason, it was a natural relationship and it just opened up. But what I was trying to reach out to Camilla afterwards was to say, why don't we bring a dog into this class that may come from Battersea Dogs Home, where we could tell their story and then they could ask questions to the dog about how he survived. Do you see what I mean? And I think there's such a big space for exploring with animals.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so non-confrontational, both the yoga and working with the dogs. You know, that's the beauty. That's when children, and quite often actually adults, disclose things, but particularly children. You know, it's why kids will often talk more about things that they're worried about, not from an abuse point of view necessarily, just in life, when they're sat in the back of the car and mum and dad are in the front of the car, because there's no eye contact. So it's non-confrontational. It's so much easier to talk about difficult things when you aren't necessarily staring straight in the eyeball of a person that you're very emotionally connected to. So that non-confrontational, that ease. And as you say, the beauty of rescue dogs is that we have the ability to tell their story to children who perhaps might have their own story to tell back.
Absolutely. And there's something about obviously sitting on a floor, on a yoga mat, rolling around, having a laugh with dogs, and then stroking the dogs. And what I noticed at the end of my session, most people are on the floor, they can't move, and they're still petting their dog and everything. They just want to communicate and they want to stay on the ground, and stuff comes up for people. And sometimes they tell me their stories, and I can't believe that a dog class has enabled this incredible bond and communication forum in a way post yoga. So sometimes my sessions go on until 5 hours later. People just don't come off the floor. They have, it's just opened up something, and it's not therapy in itself. So I guess, which leads me to obviously, Lydia, wondering whether you might want to try a little bit of doga with me today, just as a little taster. How do you feel about that?
Very
really?
Happy to.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm
love
really
to. Love
great.
To.
And have you done any yoga before, Lydia, yourself? Have you tried some?
I have done some bits and pieces, yeah.
Bits and pieces.
I'm not too bad on the flexibility side of things. So yeah, I'm very happy. Looking forward to it. Let's give it a go.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hiya, we're here to tell you about the Loose Lips podcast. We, being me, Georgie Porter,
and me, Sharon Carpenter, we're all about honesty and not holding back, especially when it comes to what's in the news.
Plus, we answer your questions and we give you advice whenever it's asked for.
Even when it's not asked for. We're all about what you're really thinking and what you really want to know.
You can expect to hear some of this.
I have to say, come on, people, we're getting a little too sensitive here.
And also some of this.
She is plugging her entire career in that one moment.
That's the Loose Lips podcast, out every Tuesday, and not forgetting Extra Lippy on Fridays.
Find it wherever you found this podcast. We'll see you there.
Okay, great. So we're going to start the music, and all we're going to do now is just relax back into the chair. This is not a physical yoga. This is more visualization and breathing. So just follow my lead, Lydia, and just we're going to work on our breathing, placing one hand on the dog. And if your dog's not there, you can just imagine you're placing the hand on your dog. Keep your palm very soft and open, so your fingers are slightly spread out. And just place the hand wherever it goes and just allow it to settle on Coco's fur. Or if your dog's not there, just imagine your hand is settling on your dog's fur and try not to move the palm of your hand. And we have been talking about the heart today, so we are going to work into the heart chakra. And most importantly, with trauma, human trauma, we tend to find it very hard to breathe, mostly to inhale. So everything in the upper chest can feel a bit tight and restricted. So placing one hand on our sternum, just circle the heart center. And then maybe just open the mouth slightly wider and create the ocean breathing. I tell my children when I do my yoga classes, imagine you are the ocean and you create the sound of the waves. So feel free to join me, Lydia, with an open mouth, slow inhaling. Very nice. And maybe a big inhale again through the mouth. And exhale. Now engage the abdomen, inhale. And exhale. Very nice. And now maybe keep the palm flat on your chest and the other hand flat on Coco, and just relax your shoulders. Continue to inhale through open mouth. And exhale. And inhale. and exhale. And slowly inhale. And exhale. And now imagine just releasing any tension on the exhale through the palm of your hand, which is sitting on Coco. So any kind of tension that you're feeling, just release it through the other palm of your hand. So we're drawing in the breath, drawing it into the heart center. And now releasing through Coco. And just let her absorb the exhalation. And then again, inhale. And exhale. And as you let go, just allow your shoulders to drop a tiny bit more. Just allow your shoulders to sink a little bit more. Drawing the breath in one more time. And now, where we're talking about opening up the truth through the heart and the throat. And I think with speaking the truth in yoga, it's around the throat chakra that we speak the truth or we start to communicate. And this can feel a little bit tight, this area. So what I want to do now is just sigh and make a vocal exhalation. So just a soft inhale. And then go, ha. Very nice. And again, inhale. Very nice. Now you can breathe through your nose. That's better. And open the mouth. Ha. And just let it resonate in the throat and in the chest. Very nice. And inhale. And as you feel the throat slowly vibrating, you can now place your whatever hand that is placed on your heart, place it on your left shoulder. If you can, you may have to change or swap. Take your right hand on your left shoulder and just breathe into that left shoulder and drop your shoulders and just breathe into that shoulder. Just feel that palm on that shoulder. And again, inhale. Exhale, and you can also pour the exhale into Coco. And one more. Exhale. And now we're going to do a powerful affirmation. And all it is to say to yourself in your mind, in your heart, I am not guilty. Okay, so taking a deep breath, keep that palm there, inhale. And just think, exhale, I am not guilty. And then inhale. And maybe see it in front of you first, and then exhale when you're ready. And then inhale. And exhale. And now we can say it together. Inhale. I am not guilty. Very nice. One more time. Inhale. I am not guilty.
I am not guilty.
One more. Inhale. I am not guilty.
I am not guilty.
with the right palm, you're just going to place it on your forehead. And now you're just going to press the forehead into the palm of your hand. And deeply relax your forehead against the palm of your hand. It's almost like you're pressing. And then just gently circle the forehead. And really breathe into your heart, breathe into Coco, breathe into the palm of your hand. And now you can just circulate the palm a little bit more to stimulate this place. And just say, I forgive, I forgive. Inhaling. I forgive.
I forgive.
And again, inhale. I forgive.
I forgive.
And keep pressing the palm really into the forehead. That's it. And again, inhale. I forgive.
I forgive.
And then we're just opening one more part of the throat chakra and the neck is just to cradle the head, taking the hand behind your head in the nape of your neck and just take your head slightly back. And maybe now you want to bring both hands behind your neck and just cradle, interlacing, and just allow that head to fall back. And just feel that throat opening as far back for the truth. For the truth to be heard. Just feel that throat really opening. Maybe you can see. I can feel like you're wearing beads. I don't know why. Are you wearing necklaces, Lydia? Are you wearing a necklace?
Yeah. I have a necklace.
Are you wearing
two necklaces in one?
Oh, how beautiful. Is there a gemstone there?
Yes, there is.
Oh God, I am psychic. So what colour?
The necklace is silver, the gemstones are clear, so.
Beautiful. So just maybe a colour for that throat. Just give yourself a bit of a colour in that throat. And just feel that gemstone really sitting in your throat. Breathing in that healing colour. Softening the throat. It's like you're having a nice melting honey in your throat, or a Lucozade, you know, like, not Lucozade, you know what I mean? Like a cough, a nice, yeah, lockets or something, like just feeling a bit of fresh air in the throat. Very nice. That's it. This is quite one of the most important points, I would say, this part. It's the throat, the Vishuddhi chakra. It's also about relationships. And healing, and it connects right to the heart and the third eye as well. So it's really nice. And I know we're not doing much with Coco at the moment, but she can still feel that. And we're now just going to bring the palms into our heart center and just breathe through our nose gently, inhaling, pressing the palms together, exhaling, just feeling that beautiful heart center, the peace through the spine, through the heart, through the throat, through the crown of your head, through the third eye. And again, if you want to, maybe put one hand on Coco and one hand on your heart. And we're just going to close with our magic sound, Om, the universal sound of creation. Om. So for Coco and you, taking a deep inhale. And one more breath, and this is for courage. Inhale. Oh. And the last one is for your mission, Lydia, to spread your truth beyond space and time and to be in your mission at all times with your courage so you can expand and help other people. Taking a deep breath, inhale. And inhale. Exhale. We're bringing the palms together to our third eye. And just bow to our dogs or to ourselves, our inner wisdom and guru. Namapa, Lydia. Namaste, Namapa. Thank you very much for this doga.
Thank you, Arnie. That was gorgeous. Thank you.
Oh, I thought you would love it. I knew you were a dogini, a yogi dogi practitioner. I just got it straight away from the moment. Amazing. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I'm feeling centered. I'm feeling calm, but I'm also feeling energized. Just a beautiful moment of connection with my authenticity, with myself, just in the middle of the afternoon, and a nice bit of connection with Coco as well. It was lovely. Thank you.
Is there anything you would like to add towards this so we complete our interview today? Anything you want to say?
I guess the only thing that I would want to say is to anybody who has listened today, who has been affected in any way, whether that is personally or through friendships or family members, you know, that if you have ever experienced sexual violence or sexual abuse, that there is confidential support from specialists out there, you know, people who will listen to you and will believe you and understand how hard it is to talk about. So there is safeline.org.uk and also gov.uk/sexual abuse support. And that's got a list of lots of other different places that you can get support for wherever you live or for whatever you need. So I just want any of your amazing listeners to know who may have been affected today that there is lots and lots of support and really specialized support out there for you, whether it's happened to you or a friend or a family member. You can all get support.
Such amazing. And thank you so much, Lydia. And don't forget the hashtag, it still matters. Use it. Use the hashtag. This is amazing. I wish you all the luck, all the success, all the healing that you need and that you can give to others.
Thank you, Marnie. I really appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity today. I've really enjoyed being on your podcast. I think what you're doing is fantastic as well. So thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Namaste.
Thanks for listening to Conversations with My Dog. Make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button so you never miss an episode. If you're listening on Apple Podcast, then please leave us a review and a 5-star rating. It helps others to find us. And talking of spreading the news, please tell another person about the podcast and help us reach more people and dogs. We'll be back with another episode, same time, same place, next week. Namapa.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.